Sand is useful when sand is out.
It's a liquid iron
tool. Yeah.
He's something else.
I love Florida.
You can have a whole steak.
Hope the new guy is just as good.
That's a well done hobby.
I like the Sarasota.
Yeah, that was first area. Night.
I like the.
What that cost you? What that cost you?
All right, we'll call our December meeting to order.
She'll run for money, not love.
It's December.
Big mistake.
First, is it?
Already.
December 1st. Roll call, we have Supervisor Poole, Supervisor Elderman, Supervisor Grady, Supervisor Zaliski called. Did you hear from Boyd?
Okay.
Supervisor Zaliski is excused, and maybe Supervisor Federick is still on his way. We have both in governance here this evening. That's our roll call. Approval of the minutes of the previous meeting from November 3rd. If everyone's seen a copy of that.
I haven't seen a copy, so I'll defer.
Okay. Supervisor Poole, did you see a copy of that?
Yes, I did.
Right. I move approval.
Well, then I'll second it. Move and second to approve the minutes of November 3rd. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? You the governance? Motion carries. Any comments from the committee on any items? I know we just went through the budget process. We're into the quiet time of the year, December, with one meeting. Anything from any committee members? I have nothing at the moment. You, the governance, anything? We'll move on to citizens' comments. Any citizens that wish to address the committee on any matter would have 5 minutes to speak. We just ask that you will give your name and address, and feel free. Any citizens' comments? Yes.
Make it quick. Hi, Colleen Fish. Well, I guess I can say Colleen Fish, 7912, 160th. In Bristol. I'm here on behalf of the Village Board of Bristol again, just to pick up on the road issue with the street trees. I don't know if you guys saw the coverage of the Kenosha News, but Uline did have the arborist and landscape people do a tree audit as to the physical condition of the trees, and they are intending to attempt to save at least 7 of those trees. However, we're here because we actually do need your help as a committee, because we still are going to need something in your construction standards that basically you need to add a sentence or something saying that in the event of tree preservation that they are able to waive the ditch construction requirements. Because without that, they don't have a way to do it, if that makes any sense. So we are assuming that that would come from you guys and then go to the full Kenosha County Board for approval. But that's what we're here to request, is that you guys take care of that legal housekeeping so that they're able to continue preserving trees without being in violation of the standards.
Okay. I did read the coverage. Gary probably knows a little bit more, but what we would need would be a new plan submitted, correct?
And Uline will be doing that.
Right. So if they submit a new plan, then we would be able to look at that plan and make changes to our ordinance.
Okay. Okay, so you're saying that, okay.
We couldn't just arbitrarily throw in some language that wouldn't fit.
Okay.
So.
No, but the concern is that as you go forward as a county, wherever there's a historic tree that they want to preserve, you need to have something in your...
But they'll, no. There'll be a different circumstance to any historical tree. And any historical tree is going to mean something more to the next person. So to put in language that's going to cover every circumstance won't work. What we need is a plan from ULI and different from the plan submitted and accepted by Kenosha County. Then we address it.
So I guess going forward, every time there's a tree in Kenosha, you need to have citizens come and lobby and do a plan.
Yeah, you wouldn't believe how many times we've done this.
Oh, okay.
Numerous times. We've had Hatfields and McCoys on Highway D, and we've had, some historical fights, so... As I said, one person's magical tree might not be the next person's magical tree. So for us to say, as simply as when there is something historic or something agricultural that we want to preserve, we will accept that. We just can't do that. We have to have a plan, submit it, and then we can say what we're going to do. ULI knows that. So ULI knows that they're going to change what they submitted and was accepted by Kenosha County. They have to submit something different.
Correct. That's my understanding
right.
as well. But my understanding was that even if they submit a changed plan, unless you have something legally in your construction standards, you can't help them anyway.
Sure we can. We just change it that night if we want to.
Okay.
It would be an exception or an addendum to an existing policy rather than rewriting policy.
Okay.
But the first thing, and ULI knows this, they're engineers, they're architects, that they, if they want to change what was accepted, they have to submit something new.
Right, and that's
right.
what they're doing.
Okay. Here, that's your understanding?
It's absolutely correct, and I've not received any, I've not talked to anybody from ULI.
Because we will work with them. No one's against this.
Okay.
Carolyn Owens, 21103 Attica Street in Bristol. I'm also on the Village Board of Bristol. And I guess I just am very happy to hear what you're saying tonight. So, and ULI was kind of like this because they weren't sure if they submitted something that anything would be done. Now, so I understand this process. They need to make that presentation before this committee?
No.
Or the board as a whole?
They submit to Gary.
To Gary.
And
okay.
Planning and Development. And the same process they used in the past.
Okay.
They're aware of it. They don't need to be told.
Trying to find out all the details here. It's like pulling teeth sometimes, trying to get everybody on the same page and so we know what's going on.
Yeah.
Because we want to see this through and we don't want to miss it, you know, because
right.
we didn't know what was going on. Okay, so they just go through normal process, planning and development and so forth. So it goes to Gary and then to planning and development?
Gary who?
Citizen.
Just me.
Just
not planning and development then.
Okay. Yeah.
It's in the village. They wouldn't be involved in it.
Okay.
Okay, so it comes to Gary and then it comes on the agenda for the land committee?
Or it doesn't, are you just
no,
able to?
Gary
it's my decision.
Gary approves and makes the decisions on everything. But if there is going to be a variance or changes made, then he would come to this committee.
Okay. That's what I'm trying to get at. So if he sees the feasibility of what they propose, then he comes back here and makes his pitch to you.
Now that we're aware of this, Gary will, I'm sure, consult with us. And
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure.
You guys meet once a month or twice a month?
Once a month.
So I can put that on my...
But we've had emergency meetings if something big came up.
Okay, I'll check the website every day then because I don't want to miss it.
Okay,
perfect. Okay. And I will tell you, Gary, I finally saw that letter that you sent to the village. Thank you. Very flexible, very open to any changes that could possibly be done. So thank you very much. I hadn't seen that letter before.
Okay.
But
sure.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, well, I think we'll be fine but once they do their paperwork and we'll see what it is. If it's feasible.
Yeah, and that's all we can ask. I mean, to be reasonable and see if it is. And,
right.
Okay. All right, great. Well, thank you very much for listening. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Any other citizens' comments? If not, citizens' comments are closed. Dan, you're first.
November was a very short month for us. We closed on November 11th. We ended up the season, you know, slightly ahead on merchandise sales, and we're doing something unique and new this year. We are having a holiday sale. It'll be Friday the 12th and the 19th, and Saturday the 13th and 20th. We're going to be having Brightondale open, and we're going to be doing email blasts to over 14,000, almost 15,000 people about the sale. And we're hoping that we can move some more merchandise through those holiday sales. So we're hoping that that works out well for us. We did have the Brightondale open in November. That was Saturday, November 1st. We had 116 golfers for the 27-hole event, which was great. I think last year it, we had 72. You know, so we did definitely grew that number by 40, and so very good positive comments about how it was run and the food and beverage that was served that day, so that was great. Right now we're working on the business plan, kind of outlining all the initiatives and activities that we'll have for the 2015 season, using that as a roadmap for hopefully a very successful year next year. Projects that were recently completed, we had the blowout of the irrigation. All the lines were put under pressure, air pressure, and blew all the water out of the irrigation lines. Everything went well, except at Pets when we got the compressor, it went down for a while, but we just delayed it a couple days and ended it the next week, and then it did go well. We had a busy year. You know, we're hoping for a better year next year, but we're already booking groups, and we're looking, we're restocking the golf shop, looking at new merchandise, and tuning up all the equipment in the maintenance departments, and freshening up the clubhouses. So that's what our plans are for the next several months, and you know, we have all the golf courses and the clubhouses winterized, so we're looking forward to the golf shows in February, and then go on from there. You know, hopefully the golf courses open in March 2015.
And then, you know, the big question that everybody's going to ask, and we'll know that, what, in a couple months? They're going to ask.
It's a little too early to tell. We're cautiously optimistic.
I know it's a couple months. Any questions for Dan? Thank you, Dan.
Just a couple things to touch on. When do we actually close the books out for golf? From a accounting standpoint. I know the course is closed now.
I'd say February, March.
So we actually have a...
If there's any year-end entries for things like insurance or depreciation or any of that stuff that come from downtown finance, that stuff might not come till a couple months into next year.
So that's when we get the final numbers, is at that point?
Yeah.
Okay. It's typically March or almost April.
And we should set our rates, what, February?
Today.
We're going to set golf rates today?
Mm-hmm. Not that golf rates? Oh, I'm sorry.
Park rates
today. Yeah. Sorry, my bad.
So golf rates usually set
in February.
Right. Just a thing or two to touch on, Dan. I know during the budget deliberations came up to quite a certain amount of discussion about RFPs and beverage and food and everything else. How aggressively are we poised to cast a wider net, if you want to put it that way, in terms of positioning ourselves for RFPs for 2015. Can you comment upon that?
Well, I mean, we sent the RFP out. We were very aggressive in trying to get others to respond to that RFP. You know, I know that with the last 2 years that we went through with the process, I mean, we only got really two people, and the one person was it twice, and they were really a small outfit that hadn't done it since 92, and the other person that had responded was a group that the more they spent was how they made more profitability. So their business plan was totally skewed. And so, we'll have to have discussions and see where we can go from here. But I know that we really went out to a wide, we broadcasted to a wide array of people and trying to get others to respond to it. So we'll talk about it internally and I don't have any other answers for you at this time.
There's some, there's been a lot of discussion. Dan has been involved in, and in this process, it was through purchasing. So with the county board chairman purchasing and myself, we've got a couple of people that have come forward that are very interested, that are qualified. So that's okay. That's an ongoing thing. But Dan's been busy, and that's okay. not his venue.
And we understand that the response has been less than desirable, and we're not, you know, looking backwards as much as looking forwards to say, okay, you know, it might take us a few whacks at this to really get a group of qualified entities to support. So it sounds like you're working with purchasing revenue discussion. So that was the tenor during the budget deliberations. We just want to make sure it gets followed through on. So as you wind down, you'll probably be more party to what's going to happen. I thought I had something else I wanted to go over, but I can't think of it at the moment. So that's my comment for the time.
Anybody else? Okay, Frank.
Well, the old 60th Street Tower, the above ground portion, is no more.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Attached a picture that was Friday. We took down the first 150 feet of the tower, 210-ton crane, 300 feet tall. It's quite an operation. Put down the remaining, so it's cut off at the ground level now. Now we have to, they've got to get the permits for the building and things like that. We separated the permits. The city was, we need to get asbestos and everything else for the building itself, but we want to get the tower down, so that's been achieved, and the rest should be done by mid-January.
What do they want to test? They want to test the ground or?
No, the building, if there's any asbestos in it, it's a little bigger than broom closet. It's part of their criteria. Any questions on that? Tower removal? We'll go to the Cape Cod restoration. We did hit the substantially complete date of the 21st. There was a Midwest shortage of concrete that hurt us. It was actually in the paper too. So, but we did hit the substantial complete date. We do have some punch list items to follow up. Metal work on the canopies is one of them. You'll see they're wrapped in waterproofing material. And also with the north entrance, we created an ADA compliant ramp entrance to it, but shortage of the concrete pushed that back, and the final measurements for the railing couldn't be made until we pour the concrete, so that'll be one of the last items to be done. We're actually getting it powder coated, which should give it a longevity and lower cost of maintenance for the future and be more resistant. And actually the legs that are going into the concrete, we're going to have those out of stainless, so even if they do with shovels or stuff get nicked, they're not going to rust over time with the salt they put down. So it'll be good for long-term maintenance. Knock on wood, it's looking that we'll be under budget on this project. With all of the excavation work and the unknowns, that's good news. Any questions?
Great.
That's it.
Hey, Frank. Thank you very much. Mike?
Brookside Care Center, I'm going to add a new project to the list. We're installing therapy tubs on 3 of the 7 wings. These are tubs that wings are not on those wings, and they have to walk everybody down there, so they want to add tubs where they're missing tubs. It's a $110,000 project.
This is somewhere where we're not going to do this major construction?
Right.
Yep.
Detention center, inmate property storage carousel. Bids have been awarded to a company called Washburn, and also to Flannery for modifying the sprinkler system above it. Materials on order, and it's a $55,000 project. Countywide projects, HVAC position. We finally hired somebody, a fella by the name of Matt Scarino. He started today, actually, and it looks really well. Custodial positions, we're interviewing on Wednesday. We've got a full-time position open at Brookside and a part-time position open at Brookside. So we'll get those filled, and then we'll have a hiring list for the future. Pretty much it.
Any questions from Mike? Larry? Gary? Thank you, Mike.
And we have a bridge on County Trunk Highway N east of Highway 45. It's over the Des Plaines River, and it's in the town of Paris. We've had deterioration problems with that bridge for some time, and we established a project to do rehab on the bridge to bring it back up to current standards for truck loading. Unfortunately, we opened bids a couple weeks ago, and they were all rejected because they were substantially higher than the engineer's estimate. Apparently, the criteria, what we're trying to do is salvage as much of the existing structure as possible, and but the standards for containment of the materials, like the beams need to be sandblasted, all the old paint needs to come off, and they need to be repainted. Well, the standards for containment of that are so high that it's just incredibly expensive. So it turns out that it's likely that it's going to be less expensive to just remove the whole thing and replace it. So we're going to modify the plans and rebid it sometime early in 2015. Schedule wise, it won't matter because this was a bit of an early bid. We're not going to do the construction till next summer anyway, so it's not going to hurt our schedule. It was just unfortunate to the extent that that bridge was re-inspected, and we are now required to post it at a 10-ton weight limit. So it has been posted. That's only 20,000 pounds, so that's not, that pretty much restricts most of the truck traffic over the bridge. I have notified the town of Paris. They're fully aware of what's going on in the local residents, and haven't had any negative comments on it up to this point. So if you do hear anything, just make sure that I want to make sure that you're aware that we are working on getting that bridge rehabbed and brought back up to standards. It's unusual. We don't have to post many of our bridges or our roads because they're typically in pretty good condition, but in this case we had to. Last time we met, we didn't have any salt. Today when we meet, our shed is full. Soon after our last meeting, we made the decision that we were going to start hauling the salt ourselves. About 3 days after that, there were so many trucks, private trucks lined up emptying salt here. They were lined up out onto Highway 50, so I don't know if that's a coincidence or not, but we have received all of our early fill salt. So we've got the county portion of the shed full, and we have that equal amount still up on the dock in Milwaukee that we call that, refer to that as a seasonal fill, and we'll take that as the space in the shed becomes available over the course of the winter. So we've gone from being pretty nervous about the situation to feeling pretty confident that we'll be in good shape for the rest of the winter now. Another item, I can't recall if it was at this meeting or the Finance Committee meeting, but at one of the meetings during the course of the budget discussions for highways, the question came up as to whether the recycled asphalt and concrete out on the Katy Park property would be we would be able to use that on the Highway F project that we're going to be reconstructing out there.
It was at it was Supervisor Dodge. I think it was at this meeting, but it might have been at the.
Yeah, I did check with the Wisconsin Department of Transportation and Federal Highways, and they said absolutely that material can be used for base material on a federally funded highway project, which that would be. So it would just need to be crushed and used, and that type of recycling is becoming so common now that there's a lot of contractors that have their own portable crushing plants, and so I just wanted to get that answer out there that absolutely that we could use that material on that.
Well, it's
project.
A good thing you checked, because if you remember, that's the answer I gave that night.
It's verified. And then just again on the trees out on Highway U, I know that the village and the village of Bristol and U-Line met out there. And I have not heard anything from either party since that time, so I'm just on standby until something happens. And given weather conditions, it's, you know, there probably isn't a whole lot of urgency on their part to get anything decided.
And I mean, Gary, you agree each incident is going to be different from the next, so we can't really draft a policy.
No. Absolutely not. You can't. There's too many factors that are involved. You know, from a traffic safety standpoint to you know, a functional standpoint involving drainage and we have to be very, very cautious from a liability standpoint. That when you don't build things to standards, you know, you likely could be exposing ourselves to a risk of liability should you know, accidents occur.
Right.
So, yeah, we have to be careful. But we'll see what kind of plan they come up with, and I will make a recommendation to you.
Thank you.
And that was all I had.
Thank you, Gary. Any questions for Gary?
Just a question, too. On the salt, we had to send some of our own trucks up initially.
Correct.
Okay. So in that instance, how did it impact us financially? Did they pay us our rate, or how did it work, the vendor?
They had reduced the price. I believe it was about $8 a ton. So, you know, if you look at it from my standpoint, the additional cost involved is really the additional fuel that was required. So it was a pretty close to a break even situation for us.
Compensation.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Their contract deficiency.
Absolutely, yes, they did, and they we negotiated with them a little bit, but we got them down as low as they would go, and then we were comfortable at that point to send our trucks there. And we just did for 3 days, and then, like I said,
miraculously
that we have more trucks than we could handle.
Any comments on rail crossings and progress where we're at with some of those rough
Sure. The Highway S crossing, I've requested a hearing with the Commissioner of Railroads. He is attempting to negotiate directly with the Union Pacific Railroad and not have a hearing. He feels that that's the appropriate method to use on that particular crossing, and that there's nothing, I have no other avenue to go. So that, you know, we're just going to have to hope for the best with that.
But there's no date set yet for...
There's nothing. I have not heard back from him on that. The Highway 50 Union Pacific crossing, there is a hearing scheduled for December 17th. That will be here. We're going to plead our case to the Commissioner of Railroads that that crossing is in terrible condition and that it's ridiculous that the public needs to be subjected to something like that. And it's not only the safety hazard, but it's, you know, it can damage people's vehicles, and they shouldn't have to put up with that. So,
wait, is that the intersection by Cooper Road?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
So we'll plead our case, and hopefully the Commissioner of Railroads will be in agreement and order the Union Pacific to do those repairs.
So the commissioner, the rail commissioner, how long has this person been in the position there?
I think he's been about 2 years.
So he's a relatively newer.
Yeah.
So he's kind of a little bit different. Attitude towards railroads. Okay.
Yeah, he seems to like to work directly with the railroads, and you know, if he can get accomplished that way, it's actually more expeditious to do it that way. But
he's a political appointee.
He is a political appointee.
Okay. You want to say his name?
Jeff. Flaley?
Yeah.
Oh, he's former. Served in the.
Former assembly.
Yeah.
Correct.
But they're all political appointees.
Yeah, but I mean, like, just like the DNR sector, I knew nothing about the DNR. Jeff Flaley knew nothing, so I mean, it's what you get.
Where is he going?
Right.
Thank you for
But he's been cooperative. I mean, he's been really good, and he you know, he calls me and, you know, asking for the status of things, and yeah. And so he's been good, but we'll time will tell how successful we are with these two crossings.
We're good. Thanks for keeping us posted on that. That's all my questions.
Anything else for Gary? Glad. Thank you, Gary. We'll move
thank
on.
Thank you.
Mr. Rudy.
For entry fees for the dog parks and parks and our bull lodge fees, nothing has changed. Nothing has increased there. But under our pavilion rentals for 2015, there are slight increases for a pavilion rental. It was 70. I increased it by 10. I'm asking for 80 for a county resident. And non-residents were 90. And again, we increased that fee by $10, so we're looking at $100 for a non-resident to rent a pavilion. Our other two fees that we changed was the beer permit and temporary structure permits. They were $35, and we increased them to $40. And when I looked at this, we're still under what communities surrounding us charge. When you look at what the city of Kenosha charges and Racine, that's kind of what I based it on. It's a slight increase. The pavilions, we rent those out. There's not a holiday or a weekend that our pavilions aren't rented out. I mean, they're in such high demand that I think part of the thing is too is that we've been renting them pretty reasonably over the years. That was it for the changes on the fees. I haven't.
Seems very fair.
Yeah.
Dog parks, that's all
staying. Everything's the same. We haven't changed the fees here on anything for, I'm going to say, 10 years. At least, it's been a long time.
Any discussion on that? I mean, I personally feel that $90 to $100 for a shelter, that's pretty good. I mean, I don't think you're going to get much more than that. That would get prohibitive if it was $200.
Well, you know, the other thing is that happens is once when we rent it out, depending on what goes on, and sometimes it takes us 4 or 5 hours to clean that pavilion back out.
Yeah.
You know, because we don't have water at them, so we'll have to truck water down there. If they make a big mess on the floor, we have to hose the floors, and there's no way I can do it without hauling water. And I mean, some days it's pretty labor intensive to turn that pavilion back around for the next party on the following day.
Right.
So,
is that per day? Is that how it runs? Is it around $80 per day?
Per day, yeah.
Okay,
we run per day.
Is that like a 24-hour period, or how long do they get from start to finish that they owe?
7 to 10 p.m. 7 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Okay, so it's
a full day.
Yeah, more than 12
for that,
hours.
Yeah.
And the dog parks, they're still paying for themselves fine.
Oh, yeah. Yep. They're doing really good.
Silver Lake Park, is that a change in policy, or is that the same policy between the beach and the park itself?
No, that's the same.
Okay.
We do not rent out the beach pavilion.
Right.
Because if a storm comes up or something, there's just no place for shelter for everybody.
So basically, Silver Lake Park was printed in red, where it says 2014, that's just going to carry over and read 2015 for this upcoming year, correct?
Any other questions for Jenny? Hey, like a motion to approve these fees, if possible. Do you have a motion?
I'll take a motion to approve as presented.
Second by Supervisor Poole, motion by Supervisor Grady to approve these fees for the 2015 season. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor, use the governance.
Aye.
Aye. Committee, aye. Okay, Jen.
Hey, thank you. I have nothing to report on KD. But for my director's report, you know the Eagle Scout built that new enclosed stage out there. Park staff just ran the underground conduit to install electric in the stage for a sound system and lighting. And the county electrician that's on my trans staff will do the actual wiring.
Where's the stage?
The Pringle Nature Center.
Yeah.
And I think the total cost for materials for the wiring project was about $800. And that... the Pringle Nature Center got a grant to cover the materials expense. At Pennfine Springs, the flagpole, I think everybody probably saw the article in the paper, about 2 months ago, I think it was Bill Guida, got a complaint in his column about the flags coming down too early at Pets. Well, our staff leaves at 2:30, and we have to take those flags down when we go, because there's 5 flags up there. Every time we lose them, that's $500. So anyways, Steve from Kenosha Ship 40 called me and asked if he could help, and he showed us a lockbox that he had put on the flagpole down by the harbor. I think he calls it the Pearl Harbor Memorial.
Yeah.
So we went and looked at that lockbox and found out where he ordered that to cover the cleat for the rope. And then he said that they would go ahead and purchase the solar-powered lights if we could install them. So they did, and I guess they work really well, unless you get a lot of days that are overcast, and then they're not making it all night. But so far, it's really working out great. Under the current project list, I've got a lot of things that I just listed that haven't changed, so we'll move right down to the emerald ash borer tree removal. And we didn't get our bids for removing the trees, with the highest bid being $1,067,000, and the lowest at $73,200. The low bidder said that he's a logger and he wanted the logs in the pulpwood, and that was part of it, and that's why his bid was where it was at. We calculated, or we had our consultant calculate the market value, and he said the market value was about $39,600. So the next highest bid from the bottom was $251,000. So even with this guy taking the logs, we're still lower than our next highest bid. And so we are meeting with the logger on the 9th to make sure that he has a complete understanding of the job. We believe he does, but we just want to meet with him and confirm that. The only downside to this is that he could not start removal till 2016. So we're going to have to deal with a few trees again this year, just like we did, or in 2015, just like we did in 2014.
Now, he would have to put up a performance bond?
Does he?
I mean, he would, under normal circumstances, put up a performance bond.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's ridiculously low bid.
Well, that's why we want, but this guy, most of these other folks with these really super high bids are tree care services, right, or landscapers,
right,
and they're doing everything with very small equipment. This guy comes in with huge six-wheeled or eight-wheeled machinery, and again, he said it's about 90 seconds to put a large tree on the ground and cut it into length, because he just grabs it, the saw comes out, cuts it off, he throws it down, and it rips it through that clam, and the computer measures the length, and it's automatically cut as it goes. I have a short video that I took up in Oshkosh of it, and then the other thing that I liked about him with this machinery was with a full load of logs on the forwarder, he said they have the ground pressure of about a one-ton truck with those eight big tires on it.
Yeah.
So the other thing that if he takes them, we don't have to fiddle around trying to find a market for the logs and pulpwood. We will have to get rid of the biomass, and I mean everybody knew that and understood that, you know, as well. But we've checked with, again, the consultant is pretty confident that with the amount of chips or limbs that we'll have, that We Energies, or he's got another one just across the border here that burns, you know, chips it and burns it in their power plants, that he said we won't have a problem getting rid of that. So we probably won't. I just want to make sure that it's gone before in 2016, before we open the parks,
right,
and that's not sitting in a parking lot. The other thing is Silver Lake Mountain Bike Trail. They've got 6 miles completed. They worked hard in October, November. They have pretty large crews and made a lot of progress. The trail is open to the public, and there are some temporary signs out there. They did find a sponsor for to purchase all the trail signage for them. So that's going to happen, and they'll install the signs. They recommended a groomer. We used our cross-country ski trail groomer last year, which isn't the best for that. And there's a guy up by Neillsville that designs and builds a sort of a roller, a grooved roller that you just pull a snowmobile or a ATV or whatever you can get through the snow with for $400. And I did order one of those. And the gentleman said it's done. It's just we have to take a trip there with a pickup truck and bring it home. All of the grooming that's done on these trails is done by volunteers. Park staff does not do it. So, and that's it.
Where's Neillsville, Dan?
They call it the high ground. It's kind of up past Warrens in Toma. It's north of.
Okay.
Is it north of Toma? I think it's a little bit north of Toma. You're getting closer to Toma Black River Falls, I think, in between there is where I believe it is. but he custom makes them as they're ordered. He doesn't stock them. It's kind of a mom and pop shop.
Right.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Well, yeah. One little thing. I did discuss with Jenny today that I'm getting a lot of requests at Petrifying Springs for permits and other parks. And one of the biggest ones that I'm getting now are for races. And these folks typically charge to enter a race. And they're making money off the races, which, you know, according to county parks ordinances, you can't do something in a park for profit.
Right.
So I kind of wanted to look into what everybody around us is doing and see if we could set a fee or some kind of rules in order to be able to allow that. Either they're donating their profit to a nonprofit organization, or, you know, cancer research or something like that. But if they're truly doing this as a business, then, you know, then I think we need to have a fee that they pay and set it up that way. And so, I mean, I'll get that all put together. And you, as a committee, have the authority to just approve that, then, the rates that would be, you guys would set the rates for those permits. So I'll get that all put together. And
what types of races are they proposing?
Well, right now they're, what do I want to call it? Well, we did the one with Fall Wheel
Running.
It's a cross country, but just through the woods.
A runner's race.
A running race, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's a little bit early because we haven't really discussed this as a committee, but you know, I would like to see something that would benefit the infrastructure of the parks because it's taking place in park ground. So I don't know the mechanics of it, but that's just kind of an off-the-cuff thought.
That's why we need a fee structure.
Yeah. Well, I've been running into this a lot lately with other things, too. And I do think that we do need some sort of a fee for a lot of these permits. I mean, when somebody wants to have amplified music, they might have their doings in an area where it won't bother anybody else. But I think instead of just okaying it and giving it to them free, there should possibly be a charge connected with it.
Right.
You know, so I mean, that's all the sort of things we have to look at. You know, some of these requests I'm getting, and they're more and more.
Okay, thank you, John.
Yep.
That's it. Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Move a second to adjourn. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you all.
Thank you.